Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. All right, so let's jump right in. First off, happy Mother's Day to all of the moms out there. I hope that everyone made the most of the day. We spent some time with both the moms in our lives and also had a lot of birthday parades and birthday extravaganzas all weekend as well, all socially distanced, of course, but, you know, trying to make the most of it. Mackenzie and I have also become quite the trivia duo. We started doing a weekly trivia on Zoom and have a whole framework built out for it that we started doing for friends, and now we're doing them for people's birthdays as they requested as well, and it's just a fun thing to do, get everybody together. I think there's generally just a bunch of people getting maybe a bit exhausted by the video calls, especially the ones where you're just kind of hanging out, staring at each other and coming up with things to talk about. So I think the good news is the trivia ones kind of give you something to pass the time, something to have some fun with, you know, so on and so forth. It is pretty funny, though, because during all of the trivia, there are several friends of mine that listen to Analytics Neat, and we were talking about a pretzel company, Eastern Standard Provisions, if any of you are interested in like pretzels. They're delicious and they ship to you frozen. And as we were talking about them on the trivia chat, one of my friends decided to make the comment that advertisements would just start popping up instantly on Instagram. So I'm glad to see that the commentary here on Analytics Neat and the A Little Too Personal awards are starting to hit home. And with that, let's go ahead and jump into some of the undercard topics. First out of the gate, we've got Tesla in the news. And no, it's not for all the things that we already know about. This is from a research that was done where somebody gained access to 13 Tesla media control units, or MCUs, the big screens that sit in the front seat that kind of control everything, and you can log into YouTube and Netflix and everything else. So apparently, they were being removed from vehicles during repairs and refurbs and things like that, and they were showing up on eBay and other places where you could purchase them. So this person purchased 13 of them, and found that each of the devices still had a ton of sensitive information in them. So things like phone books from the connected cell phones, call logs, calendar entries, Spotify and Wi-Fi passwords stored in plain text, by the way, locations for home, work, places that have been navigated to, session cookies that allowed Netflix access, and so on and so forth, as well as email accounts, all still available on those devices that were being sold on eBay. So, I mean, I think the first thing that just comes to mind here is you can't trust a vendor to go and wipe the device, right? And I think a lot of people fail to recognize that cars these days are devices. They're connected in every way. If you're using Apple CarPlay or the poor knockoff version that Android offers, you know, there's a ton of information that gets stored in your car's CPU to then make it easier for you to use, right? It's all about convenience, but I think people forget that within that convenience is a ton of your information being stored. And if you don't think about clearing that out, you know, before you have something replaced, before you sell that vehicle or trade it in for a new one, or even with phones, right? And not wiping the phone before you send it in to some third party who's paying you for it, so on and so forth, then all of your data is at risk. It's an interesting conundrum for me in terms of who's responsible for that. Right, you'd think from a process standpoint, if Tesla's doing any kind of upgrade, they would wipe it first. They should. That should just be part of the process. But I would still put a big onus of this on the consumer as well, because you should be clearing all of your data off before you do anything like that. And I just think with vehicles in particular, or even just home devices that you have connected, you probably don't think about it. Even from my perspective with staying in hotels, now that they offer connected TVs and you can log into your Netflix account, so on and so forth, I know it always says that it'll log you out upon you checking out, but I still do it myself anyways because I don't trust anyone. I subscribe to the Stone Cold Steve Austin philosophy of DTA, don't trust anyone. In other news, that MarTech map or landscape or LumaScape or however you want to refer to it that comes from Scott Brinker and Chief MarTech has hit the wire over the last week and a half or so. And it's over 8,000 different vendors. And with 8,000 tools included, the landscape churn rate was only about 8.7% since 2019. And even with that percentage being removed, one in five tools added this year to this landscape is new. I think from my perspective, this is way too much. And you have to ask yourself, like, why does this keep happening? And it's growing because there's massive opportunity and there's a lot of buzz around data and customer relationships and social. And we'll come on to some of that in a moment. But it's also because there's a lot of gaps in technologies. There's no silver bullet to solve for things as an organization. And so the question you have to ask yourself when you look at a landscape that's this large is not what technologies are available in what categories for you to consider. It's more about what gaps do you have in your organization today and how can you go about best addressing them. In some cases, that might be additive. It might be adding a particular solution for a specific use case. In some cases, it might be to subtract some of the stuff you're doing today and then add in something new that covers for several of those requirements. I think we live in an age now where everyone's being challenged to think differently, to be consumer first, and to be very data activated, if you will. And all of that means that, as we've talked about on previous episodes in the archives, that you have to start thinking differently. I thought it was interesting that Scott and Chief MarTech have kind of put up their hands and basically said, I can't possibly do this on our own. So they crowdsourced this year from many people. There's actually a tool now that you can go interact with, so you can read about some of the technologies. You can also submit technologies for inclusion. And there, as I mentioned, there was about 615 tools that were removed since last year, but there was still a 13.6% growth rate this year versus last, with a total of 1,575 new solutions added in all. Now, the overall map, I've seen a lot of jokes about this, so I'm probably not the first one to make this particular joke, but as a Game of Thrones fans, the thing kind of looks like a map of Westeros now and all these different kingdoms and different technologies. You can't even really read it. You got to zoom in like crazy to even find individual logos. But there were a few categories that I thought were worth calling out in this. I thought, one, the largest category in the entire LumaScape is social/relationships. And again, you know, focused on the fact that it is important to build that one-to-one relationship with your customers. It is important to live within social. It is important to be able to understand and measure the impact across your owned channels and your paid ones as well. The other three that I thought just were very interesting is that just data solutions in general was up about 25%. That makes sense to me. Data, you can make all the buzzwords you want. You know, data is gold, data is the new oil, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. Data, without it, you can't do artificial intelligence and machine learning. You can't keep using substandard or non-standard applications to try to capture data for you. And you have to start thinking about data as an enterprise currency and not just a particular silo. So there's no surprise there that there's organizations out there trying to capitalize on that. Chat or conversational type solutions was up 70% this year. I think that just points to the fact that, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning being applied in a conversational format to try to encourage self-service or divert people away from a call center because of how expensive that is. Even more so right now with COVID-19 because of how overburdened these call centers are and how understaffed they are because they have to be. It makes sense that these solutions are sort of capitalizing on that or growing in the market. And then the other one that should really come as no surprise is up 68% this year is compliance. If you're going to put data solutions up, if you're going to start being one-to-one with your customers, if you're going to start creating a heck of a lot more data, then you definitely need to be thinking about compliance. Not just from a regulatory perspective, not just from a GDPR and CCPA perspective, but because if you're going to take ownership of trying to build more personalized, you know, and loyal experiences for your customers that build a much tighter bond between you, then you also need to show you're a good steward of their data, of their relationship, of their account, so on and so forth. If you're not doing that and you're not putting it at the forefront, then somebody's going to come and sweep the leg, Johnny, and you're going to end up on your bottom and you're going to watch your competition sort of walk away with your customers. So that wraps up the undercard, and we'll jump into this week's main event. I had a few neaters reach out over the past few weeks that said one of the things that they thought would be interesting was to kind of understand what consumer spending and the outlook looks like these days, just given the impacts of COVID-19. And lo and behold, a good friend of mine, she works at Deloitte, shared some stuff on LinkedIn, because Deloitte has done a State of the Consumer Tracker where they're doing surveys. And so the most recent results that I were digging through were the results of a survey compiled at the end of April, so pretty recent. And I thought I'd dive into a few different things. So one is sort of discretionary spend and where that spend is from a US perspective, but also some highlights around the globe. Also, I thought I'd provide some insights from Deloitte on net spending intent and sort of where people sort of see themselves spending more money. And then it also looks like there are some consumer sort of personas, if you will, that have come out as a result of the pressures of today. And again, I do want to reiterate, I know there's a lot of people out there that are in a bad way or have lost their jobs, have been furloughed, whatever the situation may be. If there's anything I can help with, if there's any intros I can lead, if I have connections on LinkedIn that you'd be interested in getting to know better, you know, please reach out to me. I'm happy to help as best I can to anyone that I know who might need some assistance there. But let's dive into the discretionary spend. So the way that Deloitte broke this out, I thought was a very cool visual. They broke out less discretionary items. So that included things like everyday household goods, groceries, utilities, medicines, internet, mobile phone, healthcare, and housing. And then they have more discretionary items, which includes alcohol, which arguably should be, you know, very much needed, apparel, footwear, books, cable TV, electronics, entertainment, furnishings, restaurant/takeout food, travel, and vehicle fuel and motor oil. So there are several countries represented in the work. I'd highly recommend you go Google this. It's really interesting. There's a lot more in this. I'm just kind of picking some of the high points. But I think the net result is when you look across the markets and the spend, they also break it into a savings number. And actually, the market doing the most savings is actually India, followed, you know, by several others that are about half as good as that. In the US, it's only about a net 4% difference based on the analysis. So the increase in spend, as an example, is showing up in what you would expect. A lot of the less discretionary items, the groceries, you know, so the home internet, mobile phone, so on and so forth. But the numbers are alarmingly high in India, actually, versus the other countries. From a U.S. perspective, the biggest uptick in the less discretionary items is in groceries. And that makes sense because when you look at things like restaurant and takeout food, those are the areas where there's the largest decrease. Travel, obviously, across the board, no surprise there. Massive downtick in spending. Vehicle fuel, motor oil, also significantly lower for obvious reasons. I mean, not to mention that gas prices are where they are right now driving around. It's alarming to see how low that is. Restaurant takeout food, significantly lower. On average, at least 10%, although some markets actually were doing an uptick in this. I think from our perspective, at least for me, you know, here is trying to help local businesses. So there's a lot of restaurants that we enjoy getting food from that we'd like to see still here when things start to return to whatever a new normal is. But regardless, it's obviously a lot less people going out, a lot less people going to dinner. Furnishings was another big category of just massive decreases across the board. Medicines was a little bit higher, but about the same. Home internet was up almost 10% across the board at a minimum, which also makes sense. I don't know about you guys, but bandwidth has become an issue, especially when you've got two video calls going in the same network at the same time. Healthcare is kind of about the same, except in certain markets, it's significantly higher. Housing, again, you know, some increases in some areas, but not a whole lot overall. Utilities, things like that, all pretty similar. But I think for me, what was most astonishing here was that despite all of the changes, the highest level of savings was really was in India, as I mentioned, with the next highest around 15%,
or and you know in the 10-15% range. Everything else was kind of netting out. It was kind of a shifting overall of funds from one category to the next. I think the other thing that alarmed me was that almost every single country was spending less on alcohol. In my opinion, that's kind of the only way to get through some of these things. So that one caught me a little bit off guard. Deloitte then tries to basically roll this up into a few main categories and look at net spending intent over the next 4 weeks, starting at the end of April. So basically in the month of May, what are people holistically looking to purchase? And are you looking to do it more online, in-store, or mixed? Groceries was the highest, 40% said intent to spend there, 25% on household goods. Apparel and footwear was the category that took the biggest hit, -27%, which makes sense when you think of all the emails you're getting with all kinds of sales in that category for businesses that are trying to kind of keep things up and running. A lot of the purchasing intent was being done online, and you could tell it's largely in the markets where they feel more comfortable doing that. I think there's still some areas highlighted here that need to be improved upon. For example, groceries, over 2/3 basically of people said they intended to buy that in store. So I think the delivery and online capabilities need to be advanced around the world probably to be able to support that. Same with just everyday household goods. But then you look into things like apparel and books and electronics and even restaurants and takeout food, and the large percentage of that, or at least the majority, has shifted to online. And I think that's the most interesting thing to me as you look at even just how I'm operating. My preference is not to go anywhere. I know it's awful. I'm getting stir crazy, but I understand that it's for a good reason. And so I have a very much higher penchant of doing things and buying things as long as I don't have to go somewhere to do it for the greater good. And so as a result, Deloitte has sort of highlighted a few consumers as well that I thought were cool to see. And it kind of fits with some of the messaging out there. One of the emerging consumers is the stockpiler, with 56% of people sort of showing an intent that they want to stock their home with more than what they immediately need. A lot of those people are the ones that we can blame for the fact that toilet paper was the first thing to go, where Europeans, again, as I mentioned before, laughing at us that we should just buy bidets. I think they're like $40 on Amazon. The bargain hunter is another big one. If there was a great deal on a non-essential item, then they would buy it today. The socially conscious shopper, I can barely say that correctly. So that's people, about 43% of people said they'll purchase more from brands that have responded well to the crisis. And that there's also another 38% of people that said that they plan to buy more locally sourced items going forward, even if they cost a little bit more. And the last one of note are the convenience seekers, the folks that are okay with spending more for convenience. There's 48% of people that agreed with that statement. And so those last three, you know, the two that are in the socially conscious shopper and the convenience seeker, all kind of fit in this new world and how brands need to think about how they're being perceived in the marketplace, how they're responding to a crisis like this that's impacting so many people, and what level of convenience is being provided. You know, I think some people, like myself, are happy to purchase things, provided I can successfully do a curbside pickup, or I can have it online and delivered, as long as I don't have to go into a store. The majority, I'd say about 95 to 99% of what I'm buying are things that don't require me to physically go somewhere. And I'm finding a way to do without the things that I can't get. I also think there's probably another emerging consumer. It's an interesting trend that Mackenzie and I were talking about recently, which is you're starting to become okay with certain things taking longer to get delivered to you. I think we were all at the point where if you couldn't get it the next day or in 2 days, you're freaking out. I was one of those people. But now when you're looking at the greater scheme of things and what's going on in the world, you realize that you don't necessarily need everything right away. So it'll be cool, I think, to see how this shifts, what the new normal looks like, and how that impacts businesses. But for me, what this means is brands really need to be spending a lot of time and effort learning right now so that they can activate later. They need to start thinking about building loyalty, listening to consumers, and realizing that these emerging consumers that are coming out might not just be because of COVID-19. This could be part of a new normal in the way that people think. You know, we've already touched on in the archives how building a positive experience and doing good in the world has generally created more loyalty for a brand than having the best product or the highest quality product. And I think we'll see more of that continuing. And so the organizations that aren't spending the time right now to be analyzing data, the organizations that are shying away from marketing and advertising or are furloughing or cutting their analytics, their data science teams in the short term, are making bad decisions. You know, this is the time where data becomes so important, whether that's to service your customers more quickly in today's times or also to just better understand the shifts in those consumers. Because that's how you see front runners from a brand or an organization perspective fall back into the pack and others take the lead. It's moments like this where brands are challenged, where you have to kind of rise up above and find ways to create and survive in the new normal. So hopefully some of this was interesting. I was glad to have Neaters reach out and request this as a topic. And it led me into a ton of content with a lot of analysis, but I thought Deloitte did the best job of consolidating that in a way that I could sort of easily, or as easily as I could try to, communicate that to all of you. But with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Thank you again so much for listening. Please keep the comments, the questions, and the content ideas coming. And we'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. Until then, have a great rest of the week and stay safe.